chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest my dab in the middle of it. Rest my dab in the middle. We are rest my dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness, we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a lot to cover this evening. I'm just going to give a few news items here, just a few of them, about three, and then we'll move on to Greg Reese's report. But first, I wanted to let everybody know Stacey Abrams, who is a gubernatorial candidate in the state of Georgia for the governorship, is on the steering committee of the Bilderberg Group, which is what is the most powerful group that meets annually in the world. So here we have someone that says she represents the poor working people of Georgia and so forth, and she's on the steering committee of the wealthiest group, most powerful group in the world. So much for that. Now, Paul Pelosi was attacked out in San Francisco in his home, and we pray that for his speedy recovery. And some people are trying to make something more than this, but anyway, that just occurred. We've got a article that we're going to put up about a dirty bomb in the Ukraine, and there's a gentleman over there that lives over there. It's put together an article, and I'll give you a click off. So come into thesecrettruth.com and check that out. Otherwise, here we go with Greg Reese, and he's going to talk about the Connect Corporation Incorporated, which was like a voting service, election service company created by the Chinese. Boy, this is getting very, very good. And then we're going to have Will Cain interviewed Gordon Chang just recently about the Chinese problem. And then we'll have that clip later on. But here we go with Greg Reese and the Connect Incorporated.
Connect Incorporated, who built a communication platform called ChineseBrief.com for the Confucius Institute, was incorporated in 2002 in Michigan by Chinese immigrant Eugene Yu, who then went on to create a research and development subsidiary of Connect Incorporated in Communist China, registering as a foreign national under his Chinese name with U.S. dollars. 1 week later, Connect in Michigan begins outsourcing to Communist China for election software coding, and they begin developing an entire product line of digital election software. In 2014, they were focusing on developing an election backend server subsystem. In 2015, they filed a patent for network voting of absent electorates. This patent was then quickly transferred to a brand new company born out of the CCP's big tech division that specializes in elections. Connect Australia was established by Eugene Yu in 2018, and during the 2020 elections in Queensland, reporting problems were caused by coding resources being locked down in China, revealing that Australia's election software was being written by coders in Wuhan, China. According to a Chinese document entitled International Elite Entrepreneurship, the mission of Connect Incorporated is to become one of the top 50 e-commerce service providers for schools and government in the United States. A communist Chinese company quietly running election software systems out of Michigan. One would normally expect this to be a much bigger story. In November of last year, Connect received a $300,000 grant from Governor Gretchen Whitmer's team, On October 3rd, the New York Times published an article defending Connect entitled "How a Tiny Elections Company Became a Conspiracy Theory Target." The next day, Eugene Yu is arrested for suspicion of stealing poll data. He is extradited to Los Angeles, where Connect had a 5-year contract with LA County Elections. Prosecutors in Los Angeles claimed that Connect was illegally giving sensitive data to their partners in communist China. George Soros-appointed District Attorney Gascon said the investigation only involved personal information of election workers and would not impact election results. And now, Chinese spy and Connect CEO Eugene Yu's case has been sealed. The corrupt FBI has reportedly vouched for him. He was released from custody, given an electronic tracking bracelet, and scheduled to report back for arraignment on November 17th, well after the U.S. elections. Meanwhile, Connect provides the software for the U.S. military's mail-in ballots. They manage polling campaigns for elections in Australia, Canada, and several areas of the United States. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
There you go, Greg Reese, talking about this Connect company. And, you know, the governor up in Michigan gave them a $300,000 grant. What's that about? Oh, this is just so corrupt. There's so much corruption. Coming up next is Ralph Norman. He's a representative from District 5 in South Carolina. And he's being interviewed on America's Voice Live. And he says some very interesting, very unsettling things about who runs America. But here we go with that interview.
Kevin McCarthy, most likely to be the Speaker of the House when you guys take over after the midterms, says he sees nothing that this president is doing or not doing that would lead to impeachment. How on earth could an open border not lead to impeachment of Joe Biden? He's not protecting the country. He's sending billions of dollars to Ukraine for God only knows what purpose, but he's not protecting this country. He's ordering Arizona to remove shipping containers that are actually acting as a wall on the border. How is that not impeachable? How can Kevin McCarthy sit there with a straight face and say that? And how can he be elected leader of the Republican Party and become Speaker of the House?
Well, I think what he's saying is, I mean, look who's behind him. Kamala Harris. You know, the lady is, you know, she's may speak a little bit better, may be coherent, but look at what you get with her. And I think what he's saying is put the country through impeachment with what you get could be even worse. We've got our hands full. There's no question about that. But we're going to subpoena as many people as we can. We're going to hopefully have consequences, starting with Mayorkas, Ray with the FBI. I mean, a whole host of things. The whole administration is a rogue administration. And I guess we all know Joe Biden is not running this country. There is a cabal of unelected elitists who are running this country. Probably Barack Obama is involved. Probably Eric Holder. But who knows? We know it's not Biden. But the impeachment deal is a long, drawn-out thing. And if there's anybody that was coherent that could take over, that would not ruin the country. But it's not possible with Kamala Harris.
Now, therein lies the problem. So why is it, and I've asked a number of members of Congress, why is Kevin McCarthy a foregone conclusion to be Speaker of the House? Why is there nobody else willing to step up? Because there are a number of people that I think would be more effective at the job. You might even have a couple. Won't ask you to tell me what they might be, because I don't want to put you on the spot. But the fact that why is he the foregone conclusion?
I don't think he is a foregone conclusion. I think now Kevin has done a good job these last 2 years. He's raised money to elect Republicans. Now, I know the Freedom Caucus, we've got some issues that we're raising with him, and hopefully he will implement them, like committing to closing the border down, like don't give us a 20-year budget to shoot for, 5 to 7 years like the RSC has put forward, like supporting our police officers. And, you know, we give the commitment to America that the group came up with is good, but we've got to put meat on it. and we got to have action.
Yeah.
One thing we can't do, Steve, is just have words. We got to act, and I think we will. I think that's the positive part.
See, that our government is something else. There was just a recent interview with AOC on MSNBC, and I want to just give you this short little clip of what she had to say about the white superiors, the nationals, the white nationalists. She says she's so off the wall, she doesn't even understand what's going on. But this next little clip will show how, you know, uninformed she is. She's just off the wall. But here we go with AOC being interviewed on MSNBC.
I mean, there's a history of voter intimidation and voter discrimination and obstacles to the ballot, especially in African American and Latino communities. And so you've got to view the guy showing up in, you know, camo gear and masks as part of that history. This is an attempt to discourage people from going out to vote. And it's really critical in this election that every voter understand all of the different ways they can vote in their state and that they do vote and they show no fear.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think it's important to acknowledge the point that you said, that political violence can come from all different parts of the political spectrum.
Yeah.
While also really having to acknowledge a very central fact that reporting from the FBI and even in terms of Homeland Security, Jamie and I sit and he is the chair and I'm the vice chair of the House Oversight Subcommittee on Civil Rights and Civil Liberties. And we've held hearings on this and there is absolutely no doubt that the data shows that the vast majority of incidents of domestic terror come from white nationalism, and that we are really truly facing an environment of fascism. And in the United States of America, this type of intimidation at the polls brings us to Jim Crow. It brings us back and harkens back to a very unique form of American apartheid that is not that long past ago. And we have never fully healed from it. And those wounds threaten to rip right back open if we do not strongly defend democracy in the United States of America.
You'll notice the sources of her information are corrupted sources already. They've already been corrupted. They were all colluding together to frame President Trump up on that fake Russian deal. So the very sources that she says are the ones that have been corrupted. So there's no validity or credibility in what she had to say there. Anyway, what we're looking at next is, I thought I'd go back. Robert Kennedy Jr. has come up with a book. I'll have a click off on that. And also, there's a video that has used that book as a source for its foundation to put together. And they've extended the deadline for free viewing of that video, that documentary, The Real Fauci, The Real Anthony Fauci, I think it's called, and for 3 more days. I think they started yesterday with the 4th day. They said 4 days yesterday, so they've got 3 more days. So go in there, and I'll have a click-off on that where you can go in and watch that. There's part 1 and part 2, and they're both excellent. But here we go. JFK, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, spoke in Berlin on June 26, 1963. And here's the speech that he gave there. And he said, "Ich bin ein Berliner." And in German, that means "I am a Berliner." He said that twice in the speech. And I put up the actual speech on my site, where you can actually read the speech word for word. But here we go with the audio of that speech of John Fitzgerald. And Fitzgerald is a Irish family, one of the 4 leading families out of Ireland. And our Butler family is also one of those leading families in Ireland. We intermarried with some of the Fitzgeralds, the Butlers did. But anyway, that's a sidebar on this. But anyway, JFK speaking on June 26, 1963, about freedom. But here we go with that speech.
I am proud to come to this city as the guest of your distinguished mayor, who has symbolized throughout the world the fighting spirit of West Berlin. And I am proud to visit the Federal Republic with your distinguished Chancellor, who for so many years has committed Germany to democracy and freedom and progress, and to come here in the company of my fellow American, General Clay, who has been in this city during its great moments of crisis and will come again if ever needed. Two thousand years ago, the proudest boast was Civis Romanus Sum. Today, in the world of freedom, the proudest boast is Ich bin ein Berliner. I appreciate my interpreter translating my German. There are many people in the world who really don't understand, or say they don't, what is the great issue between the free world and the communist world. Let them come to Berlin. There are some who say that communism is the wave of the future. Let them come to Berlin. And there are some who say, in Europe and elsewhere, we can work with the communists. Let them come to Berlin. And there are even a few who say that it's true that communism is an evil system, but it permits us to make economic progress. Lass sie nach Berlin kommen. Let them come to Berlin. Freedom has many difficulties, and democracy is not perfect. But we have never had to put a wall up to keep our people in, to prevent them from leaving us. I want to say, on behalf of my countrymen who live many miles away on the other side of the Atlantic, who are far distant from you, that they take the greatest pride that they have been able to share with you, even from a distance, the story of the last 18 years. I know of no town, no city that has been besieged for 18 years that still lives with the vitality and the force and the hope and the determination of the city of West Berlin. While the wall is the most obvious and vivid demonstration of the failures of the communist system, for all the world to see, we take no satisfaction in it. For it is, as your mayor has said, an offense not only against history, but an offense against humanity, separating families, dividing husbands and wives and brothers and sisters, and dividing a people who wish to be joined together. What is true of this city is true of Germany. Real, lasting peace in Europe can never be assured as long as one German out of four is denied the elementary right of free men, and that is to make a free choice. In 18 years of peace and good faith, this generation of Germans has earned the right to be free, including the right to unite their families and their nation in lasting peace with goodwill to all people. You live in a defended island of freedom, but your life is part of the main. So let me ask you as I close to lift your eyes beyond the dangers of today to the hopes of tomorrow, beyond the freedom merely of this city of Berlin or your country of Germany, to the advance of freedom everywhere, beyond the wall to the day of peace with justice, beyond yourselves and ourselves to all mankind. Freedom is indivisible. And when one man is enslaved, all are not free. When all are free, then we look forward to that day when this city will be joined as one, and this country and this great continent of Europe in a peaceful and hopeful globe. When that day finally comes, as it will, the people of West Berlin can take sober satisfaction in the fact that they were in the front lines for almost two decades. All free men, wherever they may live, are citizens of Berlin. And therefore, as a free man, I take pride in the words, Ich bin ein Berliner.
I left some of that yelling and clapping, put it in there, because there was so much interest in what he had to say. But that was JFK speaking back in June 26, 1963. Coming up next is Robert Kennedy, and his father, Robert Kennedy, was JFK's brother. And he spoke in Berlin on August 29th, 2020. About the COVID-19 and what was happening and how the elites were using it to control the world and the danger of that. So here is Robert Kennedy Jr., Robert F. Kennedy Jr., speaking on August 29, 2020.
It's an honor for me that you made it from the U.S. Thank you very much for visiting Berlin and being here with us, fighting for freedom and for a better world. Thank you. Back at home in the United States, the newspapers are saying that I came here today to speak to about 5,000 Nazis.
Zu Hause in den Vereinigten Staaten behaupten die Zeitungen, ich wäre hierher gekommen, um mit 5,000 Nazis zu reden.
And tomorrow, they're going to report that, yes, I was here and that I spoke to maybe 3,000 to 5,000 Nazis.
Und morgen werden sie genau das berichten, dass ich zu etwa 83,000 bis 5,000 Nazis geredet haben werde.
I look at this crowd and I see the opposite of Nazism.
Wenn ich in die Menge schaue, sehe ich das Gegenteil von Nazis.
I see people who love democracy.
Ich sehe Menschen, die Demokratie lieben.
People who want open government.
Menschen, die eine offene Regierung wollen.
People who want leaders that are not going to lie to them. People who are not leaders who will not make up arbitrary rules and regulations to orchestrate obedience of the population.
Wir wollen keine Anführer, die wahllos irgendwelche Regelungen erlassen, um unsere Demut, um unsere Unterwürfigkeit zu erwirken.
We want health officials who don't have financial entanglements with the pharmaceutical industry, who are working for us and not Big Pharma.
Wir wollen Anführer, die keine Verbindungen mit der Pharmaindustrie haben, die für uns arbeiten und nicht für die Pharma-Lobby.
We want officials who care about our children's health and not about pharmaceutical profits or government control.
Wir wollen Politiker, die sich um die Gesundheit unserer Kinder kümmern und nicht um den Profit der Pharma-Lobby und ihren eigenen Profit.
I look at this crowd. I see all the flags of Europe. I see people of every color. I see people from every nation, every religion, all caring about human dignity, about children's health, about political freedom. This is the opposite of Nazism.
Ich sehe Menschen aus allen Nationen, mit allen Hautfarben, von allen Religionen. Ich sehe Menschen, die sich um Menschlichkeit kümmern, die hier sind, wegen der Gesundheit ihrer Kinder und wegen Freiheit und Demokratie.
Oh. Governments love pandemics.
Regierungen lieben Pandemien.
They love pandemics for the same reason they love war.
Und die lieben sie aus den gleichen Gründen, die sie den Krieg lieben.
Because it gives them the ability to impose controls on the population that the population would otherwise never accept.
Weil es ihr die Lage versetzt, Kontrollmechanismen zu installieren, die wir sonst niemals akzeptieren würden.
To create institutions and mechanisms for orchestrating and imposing obedience.
Das sind Institutionen und Mechanismen, die unsere Unterwürfigkeit erfordern.
Now I'll tell you something. It's a mystery to me that all of these big important people like Bill Gates and Tony Fauci have been planning and thinking about this pandemic for decades, planning it so that we would all be safe when the pandemic finally came. And yet, now that it's here, they don't seem to know what they're talking about.
Und wir wissen mittlerweile, dass Leute wie Bill Gates und Anthony Fauci diese Pandemie seit Jahrzehnten geplant haben, die sie jetzt über uns gebracht haben. Und wir wissen inzwischen, dass sie nicht mal erklären können, was die Pandemie sein soll.
They're inventing numbers. They cannot tell you what the case fatality rate for COVID is. at BASIC. They cannot give us a PCR test that actually works. They don't have... They have to change the definition of COVID on the death certificates constantly to make it look more and more dangerous. The one thing that they're good at is pumping up fear.
Sie denken sich alles nur aus. Sie erfinden Zahlen. Sie erfinden Zahlen zur Pandemie, damit wir in die Angst kommen. Sie erfinden diese Zahlen, die wir in der Zeitung lesen, im Fernsehen sehen. Und wenn wir die Zahlen sehen, bekommen wir einfach nur in die Angst.
75 years ago, Hermann Göring testified at the Nuremberg trials. And he was asked, how did you make the German people go along with all this? And he said, it's an easy thing. It's not anything to do with Nazism. It has to do with human nature. You can do this in a Nazi regime. You can do it in a socialist regime. You can do it in a communist regime. You can do it in a monarchy and a democracy. The only thing a government needs to make people into slaves is fear. And if you can figure out something to make them scared, you can get them to do anything that you want.
Hermann Göring hat am Ende des Krieges gesagt, es hat nichts mit Nazitum zu tun, dass man die Menschen, er wurde gefragt, warum haben die Menschen das gemacht in Deutschland? Er hat gesagt, es hat mit Nazitum nichts zu tun. Das kann man im Sozialismus machen, im Kommunismus machen, in Monarchien machen, in Demokratien machen. Es ist die menschliche Natur. Wir müssen die Menschen nur in die Angst bringen und dann folgen sie uns.
Aber 50 years ago, my uncle John Kennedy came to this city.
Vor 50 Jahren kam John F. Kennedy hier nach Berlin.
He came here to Berlin because Berlin was the front line against global totalitarianism.
Er kam nach Berlin, denn das war die Front gegen den Totalitarismus.
And today again, Berlin is the front line against global totalitarianism.
Und es ist heute ganz genauso. Berlin ist die Front gegen Totalitarismus.
Came here, he proudly said to the people of Germany, ich bin ein Berliner.
Und er hat stolz gesagt.
Today, all of us who are here today can proudly say once again, ich bin ein Berliner.
Und wir alle heute können stolz sagen, ich bin ein Berliner.
And you are the front line against totalitarianism.
Und wir sind wieder die Front gegen Totalitarismus.
I'm going to say one more thing.
Ich möchte noch eine Sache sagen.
They haven't done a very good job about protecting public health.
Sie haben keinen guten Job gemacht, die Gesundheit des Volkes zu schützen.
But they've done a very good job at using the quarantine to bring 5G into all of our communities.
Aber sie haben die Quarantäne genutzt, um 5G in unsere Gemeinden zu bringen.
And to shift us all, to begin the process of shifting us all to a digital currency, which is the beginning of slavery.
Und sie haben den Anfang geschaffen für eine digitale Währung. Und das ist der Beginn der Sklaverei.
Because if they control your bank account, they control your behavior.
Und das, diese Kontrolle, sie können uns nicht in unserem Verhalten beeinflussen.
And we all see these advertisements on television, saying 5G is coming to your community. It's going to be a great thing for all of you. It's going to change your lives. It's going to make all of your lives so much better.
Und wir sehen, dass 5G überall hingebracht werden soll. Die Fernseher sind voll davon, die Anzeigen sind voll davon, die Werbung. Sie sagen uns, 5G macht unser Leben besser.
And it's very convincing, I have to say. Because I look at those ads and I think, that's great, I can hardly wait till it gets here.
Und die wollen einfach, dass wir dieses 5G einfach akzeptieren.
And then, because I'm going to be able to download a video game in 6 seconds instead of 16 seconds.
Und nur, weil ich ein Videospiel dann in 6 Sekunden statt in 16 Sekunden runterladen kann.
And is that why they're spending $5 trillion on 5G?
Und sie geben Milliarden, Billionen von Dollars aus für 5G?
No. The reason is or surveillance and data harvesting. It's not for you and me. It's for Bill Gates. It's for Jeffrey Zuckerberg. And it's for Bezos.
Und es geht nur um Überwachung und Datensammeln für Bill Gates und seine Freunde und nicht für uns.
Bill Gates says that his satellite fleet will be able to look at every square inch of the planet 24 hours a day.
Mit seinen Satelliten kann Bill Gates jeden Quadratzentimeter des Globus beobachten.
But that's only the beginning. He also will be able to follow you on all of your smart devices through biometric facial recognition, through your GPS. You think that Alexis is working for you. She isn't working for you. She's working for Bill Gates, spying on you.
Und sie nutzen das, um uns auszuspionieren mit der Gesichtserkennung. Die ganzen Smart Devices, es ist nicht für uns. Es ist nur für die Überwachung und für die Datensammlung.
And the pandemic is a crisis of convenience for the elites who are dictating these policies.
Diese Pandemie kommt der Elite zu Pass, damit sie uns alles diktieren kann, was sie will.
It gives them the ability to obliterate the middle class, to destroy the institutions of democracy, to shift all of our wealth, all of us, to a handful of billionaires to make themselves rich by impoverishing the rest of us.
Und sie nutzen die Pandemie, um uns zu überwachen, um uns zu kontrollieren, komplett zu kontrollieren und um den gesamten Wohlstand von der Bevölkerung zu einer Handvoll weniger aus der Elite zu transferieren.
And the only thing between them and our children is this crowd that has come to Berlin.
Das Einzige zwischen denen und unseren Kindern ist diese Menge hier in Berlin.
We're telling them today, you are not going to take away our freedom. You are not going to poison our children. We are going to demand our democracy back. Thank you all very much for fighting.
Ihr bekommt unsere Freiheit nicht. Ihr bekommt unsere Kinder nicht. Und wir retten unsere Demokratie. Vielen, vielen Dank. Thank you, sir, so much. Thank you.
That was quite a speech. And anyway, come over to thesecrettruth.com and you'll be able to get a click off and go directly into that video about the real Fauci and Fauci there, real Anthony Fauci. And the documentary is Explosive, part 1 and 2. So come in there and click off on that. There's a click off on Robert Kennedy's book also. Okay, what we have next is just a short clip of Jay Dyer, and I'm going to put a click off of his program this last Friday up there. But he talks about how the left has been used to circumvent and to marshal and to, you could say, manipulate us into certain changes that we might not necessarily want. So here we go with Jay Dyer in about 45 minutes. And then I'll end up with Gordon Chang's interview by Will Cain about the danger of China.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. Your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. We were just covering the history of revolutionary self-destruction and how radical leftism is a tool to further the Overton window. This is another point I wanted to get to that I didn't get to, which is that, you know, a lot of people wonder, well, you know, nobody really follows these radical, you know, eco groups or the Extinction Rebellion people. You know, they look ridiculous, but that's their purpose, is actually move the center more to the left. That's their purpose. So I think a lot of oligarchical elite know that, you know, these radical environmentalist people, the radical green people, the animal rights, the vegans, these kinds of people, when they do their protests, when they do these kinds of things, it's not that the elite believe that the majority of the population is actually going to come to believe those radical views. But the purpose of the radical pushing the line even further out, right, even if they look fringe, is that what that does is it has the effect of making what is the center position, the logical, quote, centrist position, be more towards the left, you see. That's the whole purpose of those kinds of groups, is to just, as many of you probably know, move the Overton window. And so that's just an example of how these groups are used by, very wealthy, very powerful people who have more or less adopted a completely anti-human, a completely anti-natalist type of position. Most of the wealthy elite, right? We see a little bit of a kind of a reaction to this, I guess, in some of the today's billionaires with some of the news that's coming out. But for the most part, the majority of the zillionaire, billionaire class, they don't have any, they're completely anti-human. They're completely 100% on board with, and the major promoters and funders of, the Great Reset transhumanist agenda.
Yes, it's unfortunate, but the wealthy have been bringing about world communism to put us into slavery. And that's basically what he said on other programs. But I'm going to put his full clip up. Jay Dyer comes up with some absolutely great things. Next, Will Cain, okay, is interviewing Gordon Chang, an expert on China. And we're just going to run this to the end of the exit music. And then we'll see you next week. But God bless each and every one of you.
Gordon Chang, great to see you again. I'm so glad to have you here on the Will Cain podcast.
Thank you so much,
We've
Will.
Known each other for quite some time. So when I saw this tweet from you, it caught my attention, Gordon. I want to read it for the audience, and I'd love you to explain. You tweeted, after the stunning developments at the CCP's 20th National Congress, most all of our assumptions about China look obsolete. We must now prepare for a perilous future. What did you mean by that tweet, Gordon?
The 20th National Congress, that was stunning, some of the most extraordinary events in the history of the People's Republic, and all of them ominous. First of all, we saw Xi Jinping get his precedent-breaking third term. He also packed the Politburo Standing Committee, which is the highest decision-making body in China, all with his loyalists. So there are no dissenting voices at the top of the party. We know what he wants to do. He's a genocidal monster. With the crimes against humanity, against the Uyghurs, the Tibetans, and others, his repression across China. And he is the most ambitious aggressor in history. He's been pressing these notions that China is the only legitimate state in the world. In other words, the United States is no more than a colony. And he also believes that the near parts of the solar system should be Chinese, part of the People's Republic of China. So there is no compromising with this figure. And yet we have a political establishment in our country and in other countries that are seeking accommodation with him when they should be preparing us for what he has been talking about. He was very clear in his work report to the 20th National Congress, which opened the event. He's talking about an ominous, grim future, where no one threatens China, but he still talks about this. And he talks about annexing parts of China's periphery, especially Taiwan. He's told us what he's going to do. We have a political class that has very little sense of urgency.
Let's talk about that urgency. I've read reviews of that 20th National Congress, and it's notable how often he talked about security as opposed to, for example, economy. Not that I think that he and China is leaving behind the power that they've accumulated through their economic might. But there was a notable emphasis on security. You mentioned not just Taiwan, but you mentioned the solar system. So let's define both the parameters of his ambition, which you began to, but also the timeline for his ambition.
Well, first of all, he has been pressing this notion of the mandate of heaven over Tianxia, or all under heaven. And, Will, it's not only that Chinese rulers have a right to rule all under heaven, but that heaven compels them to do so. He's been, we have seen him talk about this subtly in the first decade of this century when he was not in power, and he's been clearer about this as is 10 years at the top of the Chinese political system. So there's no question about what he wants to do. In terms of timeline, he said in a number of things going back to 2019, when you start to put them all together, that he plans to annex Taiwan during his tenure. He talks about this must occur during the new era. that is essentially his code for his rule. And he also said something in 2019, which really is stunning. He said that the problem of Taiwan, and he calls it a problem, Will. He said this problem cannot be passed down from one generation to the next, which means that he's on an accelerated timeline. And this is something that we have not been willing to acknowledge in this country. We always say, well, yeah, he wants to do it. But we don't talk about the urgency that he obviously is expressing. He's telling us. He's telegraphing his punches. As James Lilly, our famous ambassador to Beijing, said, we're just determined not to listen.
Is that the trigger point? Gordon, I mean, I think for many listening, listen, we need to talk about various aspects of China and the way it's worked its way into our lives. But obviously at the forefront of anyone's imagination is when you say we have a perilous future, we envision a kinetic war between two world superpowers. A, is that what you envision? And B, is Taiwan the trigger point?
Taiwan could be the trigger point, but we know that, for instance, China has been pressuring the Philippines, trying to break it apart. And so we saw, for instance, repeated attempts, especially November and July of this year, where the Chinese were attempting to block resupply of a Philippine outpost at Second Thomas Shoal. This is after they seized Scarborough Shoal. And this is so serious that even Anthony Blinken, our see no evil Secretary of State, actually threatened the use of force twice starting last November. And then we have the Chinese in Japanese territorial waters in the East China Sea. Chinese troops are already deep into Indian-controlled territory in Ladakh. So, yeah, it could be Taiwan, but it could be any place else. And we know the Chinese will take us by surprise. But, you know, this is not necessarily kinetic war. So, for instance, last year, Will, 77,000, maybe 78,000 Americans died from illegal fentanyl, either from fentanyl itself or fentanyl mixed with methamphetamines and cocaine. These come from the large, well-organized international fentanyl gangs that could not operate in China with in a China's near total surveillance state or total surveillance state, depending how you look at it. They couldn't operate without the blessing of the Communist Party. And by the way, these gangs actually launder their proceeds through the state banking system. So that's 78,000 Americans who have been murdered. And we are not willing to acknowledge that. And so that's war. When you kill, you know, tens of thousands of Americans, I consider, with a deliberate act, I consider that war. I mean, the same thing about COVID-19. We could run through all of this, but this is a struggle. This is more than just what we think it is. And it's an existential struggle for us.
While we're on the note of COVID-19, Gordon, why has China taken a zero COVID policy, a zero COVID transmission policy, hard lockdowns on their citizens? Do they know something we do not about COVID, or are they simply using COVID as a tool to suppress their own population?
Well, by now it's clear that zero COVID is not working. So the conclusion is inescapable. They're using it, I believe, for two reasons. One of them is, as you point out, to control the Chinese people. The second is they're using this as a weapon against the United States. From the very first days of this pandemic, they were saying that their ability to control infections and deaths showed the superiority of Chinese communism over American democracy. So they believe that they can use this to undermine the faith in democracy, not only among the Chinese, but among Americans and others. So this is an attack on our form of governance. And that's why, you know, they believe that isolation works. It's the only weapon that they think they have against the disease. So they're going to continue to do this because it means that this is regime legitimacy in China, because every case of coronavirus in China is a threat to Communist Party rule.
But, Gordon, okay, so every case of coronavirus in China is a threat to Chinese Communist Party rule. But I've also read, and I defer to you on what's happening within China, but I've also read that these zero COVID policies are sowing dissent within the population. People are upset about being locked down. So, you know, I keep looking at the way they've handled COVID, wondering, you know, in some sense of humility, Gordon, what do they know that we don't? In another, you know, attempt to be more calculated, I do think, well, this is their way to control their population. But then I ask myself, is it working if it's actually sowing dissent among the population?
They don't care. I mean, they obviously know that this is unhappy. But you got to remember that Li Chong, who was the Shanghai party secretary, one responsible for those horrible COVID lockdowns in March and April, he looks like he's going – he not only is on the Politburo Standing Committee now, but it looks like he is going to – well, he is China's number two. And it looks like he's going to be the premier of the state council starting next March. So, you know, obviously they don't care because they believe that there are other things that they can obtain or that are important to them. This is a communist system. It's top down, and they are forcing the Chinese people into things. You know, obviously it's creating great amount of dissent. It's occurring at the time where there are other causes of concern in among Chinese people that are making them angry. China is a very angry place right now. Communist Party knows it, and it believes that the way for it to go forward is extreme repression. And that's why China's move, it's no longer authoritarian. You know, you hear all these people say, oh, China's authoritarian. Well, no, it's not. I mean, I think it's totalitarian. One could say, well, it's only semi-totalitarian on the way to totalitarianism. But we can see where this is, and it's no longer the China of 5 years ago or the China of 10 years ago.
So you talked about the various things beyond COVID that are upsetting the Chinese population. You've written the book, The Coming Collapse of China. And I think in our past conversations, Gordon, we've talked about the fact that economically China is a paper tiger. At least its reputation exceeds its actual, you know, punching weight. That, yeah, they do have great economic influence on the world, but it's papered over with massive amounts of debt and false infrastructure projects. And I think that you've surmised then, well, there is a collapse in China's future because of this sort of house of cards that is their economy. But how do you balance that, your prediction there's this coming collapse of China, against this moment now that you're telling us as Americans, hey, we're on the precipice of something perilous?
We're on the precipice of something terrible, largely because China's facing simultaneous crises. So, for instance, you have plunging property prices, which are far more serious in China than it would be in our society, because the Chinese people use apartments as stores of wealth. So you got plunging property prices, an economy which I think is contracting well. Falling currency, debt crisis, companies going defaulting one right after the other in the property sector, worsening food shortages, deteriorating environment, and as we've talked about, these fast-moving COVID outbreaks. When we listen to Xi Jinping's work report, which opened the 20th National Congress on the 16th, he did not talk about the things that really are of concern, which we've just discussed. He didn't talk about plunging property prices or youth unemployment, the things that really matter to the Chinese people. And the reason, Will, is because I believe that Xi Jinping knows he has no answer for it. So Xi Jinping's answer is to say, I'm going to distract the Chinese people by some adventure abroad. And that's why we've got to be concerned. You know, we have seen him not only the fastest military buildup in history since the Second World War, but also he's mobilizing the Chinese civilians for war, civilian society. And when we saw the new Central Committee and his Politburo Standing Committee, he's got a war cabinet, as it's now been called. So the signs are there. Xi Jinping, you know, we can't say, oh, he didn't warn us. So that's why, you know, a China which is in distress is a far more dangerous China than one that is stable.
Okay, I want to talk about public relations for a minute, and in terms of China, it may be better characterized as propaganda. You said a minute ago, Gordon, you know, for example, their COVID policies are an attempt to show the world that Chinese-style semi-totalitarianism or authoritarianism is better than democracy. Who is that targeted toward? Who is the subject of that propaganda campaign? Who are they trying to convince?
I think in this, they are, well, there's multiple audiences, as there are often, but I think the primary audience are the Chinese people, because they want to show that democracy is no solution for problems. And then, of course, they try to undermine our society. And let's be clear about this. This is not just propaganda. They're trying to incite violence on American streets. They've been doing this consistently through since 2020. The new report from Mandiant shows that these Chinese propaganda networks, which are undoubtedly run by Beijing, have been advocating civil war in the United States, have been advocating violence. You know, Will, these are acts of war. This is not just subversion. These are acts of war. And we have a political class, Republicans and Democrats, liberals and conservatives, who have decided that they are going to be oblivious about this. So, you know, Biden's not doing anything about it. Trump, you know, tried to do something, but was obviously inadequate considering what the Chinese were doing. You know, all I can say is that we Americans have got to take our society back, because if we don't do that, we're going to lose our country, because China is making sure that they are doing everything possible to destroy our America.
You know, let's go back into this concept of kinetic war. You said that you don't see, perhaps, and we're going to have to come back to that idea of an inflection point, a desperate China that needs to act out abroad. But it seems to be China's approach for a long time now, Gordon, decades, that kinetic war is not the course of action with the West, that you can be patient, you can play the long game. And I don't want to try to, you know, put Chinese foreign policy into just my own dumbed-down, simplified words, but to play this game of unrestricted warfare where you participate in American culture, you participate in any adversary's life and society in ways that don't involve shooting a gun. You know, what is that? I've read the reports about, well, there's these Chinese police stations across the world, not just in America, but to control their own Chinese population across the globe, like shadow police stations.
Right.
Here could be in Dallas, a shadow police station in Dallas that controls the behavior of Chinese nationals in Texas, or whatever it may be, in the university system, in our culture. Give me some sense in your mind of the unrestricted warfare that China is playing right here in America.
Well, we know the most important one is, as I mentioned, the incitement to violence on American streets. That is a direct threat to the U.S. It's an act of war.